Tesla says everybody can have a self-driving car for an extra $8,000. Google might be getting a skinny bundle. Apple's new Macs might be coming next week. La Echo has a phone, a security system, a self-driving car, and pretty much everything else you can think of. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1623, recorded Wednesday, October 19th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now, enter promo code TNT, and you'll receive 30% off your entire order.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/TNT and enter promo code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything that happened in technology today.
Yes.
And I want to thank Jay Schmidt, who says we are the Samson and Delilah of Tech News.
So I actually had to look this up.
Oh, did you?
Believe it or not.
I gave you some, I prepped. I added a little note there.
I saw it in there. I was like, you know what? I'm going to take some time. I'm going to look it up. We are either biblical figures we are an opera or we are a song by the Grateful Dead, which I'm guessing is maybe where this came from. Because it was a popular song by the Grateful Dead, apparently. I'm not a huge Deadhead.
So you don't know the Samson and Delilah story, the cutting off the hair or the power?
Or a song by Thomas Dolby? No, I actually don't.
Did you not go to Sunday school, Jason Howell?
I didn't go to Sunday school.
No, all right, so then we're the Grateful Dead song.
Okay, excellent. That's kind of what I figured. Either that or the obvious other choice is Thomas Dolby, because I'm sure that's a pretty awesome 80s song.
Right.
Well, just a guess.
You know, we are neither Samson nor Delilah. I am Megan Maroney.
Yeah, and I'm Jason Howell. Sorry, didn't mean to fool you there. Google is working on a new TV service that will be found within the YouTube platform when it launches. It's expected to premiere in early 2017. Currently, it's called Unplugged. The service will offer a skinny bundle of live TV options and run between $25 to $40, according to media executives who spoke with the Wall Street Journal. CBS is supposedly the first major TV network to sign up for the service, with deals in the works with 21st Century Fox and Walt Disney Co. A representative from YouTube declined to comment, of course. And I don't know. I think this is an interesting turn of events in the sense that Apple has been trying to do this. And they, you know, reportedly a couple of months ago, apparently kind of bailed on this idea and decided to go more for a software style approach as opposed to making these deals and everything. And CBS, I mean, I used to work for CBS when I worked at CNET. CBS has been very kind of hesitant when it comes to digital media distribution. So that's that's kind of a fascinating to me major partner for Google to make.
Yeah, this elusive skinny bundle. No one's been able to do it. It's like a unicorn, but it's what we all want. Why can't we get what we want? Just the channels we want for $40 or $50. So I'll be interested in this. I forgot that CNET is owned by CBS.
Yeah.
What do people watch on CBS?
What do they? That's a good question. I don't watch CBS, so I don't really
either.
Know.
I'm like, are there shows?
Burke seems to know. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Was that CBS? No, that was Fox. Yeah, are they? Yeah, see, apparently there are many things I don't know about random
questions. So, because I'm like, CBS, awesome. What is there to be watched?
Yeah,
there?
I mean, but, you know, it's a major network. So there's obviously shows of caliber that, you know.
The Good Wife.
There you go. The Good Wife. I've heard of that one.
I was like, why do I know CBS?
I watched that on Amazon.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kara, for piping that. NCIS. There we go. I knew.
Okay.
So there are shows. I mean, you know, it's one of very few major networks to strike a deal with Google. And, you know, others have had a very difficult challenge in doing this. CBS CEO Les Moonves had confirmed last December that Apple and CBS could not reach an agreement and just basically, you know, said they what they wanted was too high. I don't know if maybe CBS's demands were also very high and there was just no common ground. So Google was able to figure it out. I don't know what that means, but I'm very curious to see. I mean, this is like right around the corner. If it's going to launch, it's happening in, you know, the early 2017. So we're not going to have to wait very long.
Yeah. I mean, TV is losing audiences. YouTube is gaining audiences. Like it feels like YouTube is the one, you know, is the Goliath in this David and Goliath story, as long as we're going to spend some time talking about the Bible. So, yeah, I think that, CBS is lucky to have YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Apple has sent invitations to journalists for an event in Cupertino next week on October 27th. The invite says, "Hello again," which is a reference to the launch of the original Mac in 1984, which was heralded by the word hello. Now, this implies that we'll get some new Macs, possibly a redesigned MacBook Pro with a touchscreen keyboard for the function keys, maybe even Touch ID on the MacBook Pro. Whatever updates they decide to shower upon us will be much appreciated. This machine has not been updated since 2012, so we are ready for some new Macs. I am excited. This is all rumors. We don't know what we're going to get. Maybe an OLED touch control bar, like I talked about, a refreshed MacBook Air, perhaps. iMacs, desktops, Mac Mini, desktops, Mac Pro.
When I was looking at like the different, you know, sources say, it was like, oh, so every single product in Apple's like Macintosh catalog.
Right. No Apple car.
Well, not every product in Apple's library of things, but in their Macintosh kind of, you know, devices. Every single iteration of their computer is going to get an update. Who knows if it'll be that broad. You could also see a standalone 5K monitor was another thing that Bloomberg was saying we could see. We're going to be doing live coverage here, of course, for this event. That's next Thursday, I believe. The event's 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Megan, myself, and probably more.
Andy
is definitely confirmed.
Yep.
Okay. So there we go. We're going to be here covering the event. By the way, The Verge also posted an article that basically says Wall Street Journal has its own sources that are also pointing to Apple releasing that that smart keyboard that we talked about. I think it was late last week with the partnership with Sonder that would put e-ink into the keys itself. Mm. So more sources pointing to this actually happening, which. I don't know. I really like that idea. For some reason, this really captures my imagination. I want it. you do not, apparently.
No, I want it. Okay. Want it. I threw this MacBook
you should want
on
this.
The ground the other day hoping to destroy it, but it lived.
It's okay. See, they're workhorses. Unlimited has become a silly word in the world of mobile technology. T-Mobile, for example, would call its services unlimited, when in reality, once the data threshold was passed, the customer would see transfer speeds throttled through the floor, so slow that data might as well be non-existent. A federal investigation into this type of marketing began last year, and as a result of that investigation, T-Mobile now is on the hook for $7.5 million to the government, along with $35.5 million worth of data and discounts for affected customers. T-Mobile CEO John Legere called this a good settlement, saying that more info is best for its customers.
That's the weirdest part. It's good that they caught us lying. It's good.
It's good that we're going to tell the truth more often now that we were caught not. You know, I mean, I don't know. Well, no. No matter how you slice it, it's very deceptive to say unlimited and then throttle it through the floor. I've certainly experienced it on my phone, and I'm with T-Mobile, where I would pass that data threshold on my plan. And I mean, yeah, I guess there's probably data going through there, but if I really needed to update like a single web page or whatever, it would take minutes. It would not happen at any speed that would be considered usable, and you give up well before you would see any sort of data hit your screen. So yeah, it was practically like it was non-existent.
I think that we get used to them being tricky. We get used to them saying, you know, you get this free tablet or you get the, you know, and then you'll only pay for it for the next 20 years. But, you know, or just like the whole way that we pay, you know, that, oh, it's a free upgrade, you know, and it's only $10 a month until 2095. You know, so Thank you, FCC, for like not let, because I always think, oh, well, if I had read all the fine print. But they're really saying like this was deceptive advertising and they're going to pay for it. And, you know, there's some good punishments there. You know, they have to buy laptops, $5 million in free devices and tablets for low income families. That's great. Mm-hmm. So and, you know, and people can get their, you know, if they suffered the slings and arrows of non-unlimited, then yeah, they can get paid 4 gigs of data. They'll get an extra 4 gigs of data.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Better than nothing. T-Mobile currently has its unlimited approach on like all of its plans, basically, right? And what they do there is they deprioritize the top 3% of users only during network congestion. If they really have to make changes, they take that top 3% and they deprioritize it so everybody else gets unencumbered access, I suppose. I don't know what that actually means, though. I was trying to figure out, like, what does deprioritization mean? Does that mean that they get slower speeds or that they're less likely to connect to the site? Because that, yeah, it's still kind of murky.
And the reason why it hurts so much is there was true unlimited. People had true unlimited in the beginning, and then they took it away from us. Well, today, the tech media world remembers David Bunnell, founder of PC Magazine, PC World, and Macworld, who died. He died last night at his home in Berkeley, California, and he was only 69 years old. Bunnell began his career editing a newsletter about the Altair for Micro Instrumentation and Telemetry Systems Incorporated, or MITS, where some of his colleagues were Bill Gates and Paul Allen. According to Harry McCracken, writing in Fast Company, this was the first publication dedicated to personal computing. So I never knew David Bunnell, but I just do feel like I've lived in this world for so long. Of course, Tech TV was owned by ZDTV, which was owned by Ziff Davis. And PC Magazine was sold to Ziff Davis. Immediately, Bunnell left Ziff Davis to go to IDG, which was also the big competitor to Ziff Davis. So, I mean, it's exciting. This is real computer history. Personal Computer was one of the first glossy magazines devoted to tech. It was seen as less geeky than Byte, if you remember Byte. So, you know, and he started, like, you know, Macworld started the Macworld Expo. That was the World Altair Convention was the first conference for PC users. Just a real part of history, and so he will be missed by many.
For sure. I mean, I remember the very early issues of PC World when they were starting to come out. I mean, that was about the time when I was starting to get really interested in computers as a kid. And I'd be at the grocery store and I'd see that. I mean, it was always super thick and, I mean, just loaded with ads. And I still loved it because I loved to, like, look at all the ads, even like spend as much time looking at the ads as reading, you know, and a lot of the stuff I didn't even really understand because I was so young, but and just kind of like daydreaming about being able to, you know, get further into this world of computers and everything. And so much of what we do on this show is reading the work of others who are absolutely influenced by the work that you see here, but you know, that was kind of set forth by David and other people kind of in those early years where, you know, computers were starting to become a little bit more mainstream and kind of edge in there, and journalism, you know, latched onto that. So a lot of what we do here is based on it, whether we know him specifically, you know, in great detail or not. So much respect for his work. Voice assistants are often criticized for not being as good as humans in detecting and understanding conversational speech, but Microsoft researchers claim they've reached human parity for the first time. Their system, called Switchboard, basically Microsoft is claiming it has an error rate of 5.9%, which matches that of human professional transcriptionists who were asked to transcribe those same conversations for comparison. Microsoft has high hopes that these advances will significantly affect all types of products, including, of course, its very own products, Xbox, Cortana, and speech-to-text transcription tools from Microsoft. And I think kind of the next step here, and we're moving through this stuff so fast, so the fact that they've reached parity to some degree now means that a lot of the other systems are probably going to be hitting that very, very quickly. And that just opens the door for, you know, moving beyond that basic hurdle to get to the more advanced stuff, which is, you know, taking that and actively understanding what those words mean. And we see a little bit of that right now in voice assistants and everything like that. But when you open it up so that at a conversational level, it's as, you know, detectable as human understanding that just opens it up to crazy robots that we never thought of or that we only saw in science fiction, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, transcription, it's like the error rate is now the same as humans. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to take jobs from any humans, but I feel like, you know, transcription is something that a robot could do and should do.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
It's, yeah, transcription's not very fun. Have you ever done transcription in any way?
No.
Oh, I did it sometimes at CNET when I worked at CNET transcribing certain things, and it was not a fun job. So I would be happy to let a machine do it for me.
Well, I really do think, I mean, I can tell it's getting better. Like, I get a lot of emails from people who are blind, and, you know, they're very long emails. And mm-hmm. and so it's just like, it has obviously is getting better.
For sure. And also, Google Voice, the voice search or service rather, which is kind of like voicemail in the cloud. For years, it was comical to read the transcription of the voicemails that would be left, and it was almost like it was creating poetry because it was so disconnected from what was actually said. And somewhere in the last year or year and a half, they rolled out an update that, I mean, completely changed it, and now it's almost always at least, I'd say, like 80-90% dead on, so you actually can read it and understand what it says. So it's already come so far, so closing that gap is a pretty big deal. Before we move on, I should say Tesla, right at showtime, made an announcement. Elon Musk, of course, had teased this announcement for days. It was supposed to happen on Monday. They pushed it to Wednesday, and it happened right at showtime. Basically, their announcement is that Tesla is bringing full self-driving capabilities to all of its new cars, with hardware that includes 8 cameras. Those cameras have 360 degrees of view, 820 feet of vision. It's also going to be included with 12 ultrasonic sensors for detecting objects and hopefully eventually avoiding them. Not fully capable at first, but it's going to be activated once they do further calibration of their systems and everything. So it's going to be that kind of thing that you get the car and then eventually it can be lit up, I'm assuming, through an over-the-air update. New Teslas won't have automatic emergency braking, collision warning, lane holding, and active cruise control until those can be validated and then again added at a later time.
Yeah, so we've talked about these over-the-air updates or these add-ons. So, you know, it's like read the fine print because the Model S is, or the Model 3 is $35,000, but then how much will it cost for all these add-ons? How much will it cost for
your in-app purchase, in-cab purchase?
Right. So, so it might not be so inexpensive once you have all those self-driving capabilities. But yeah, I mean, there are apparently more cameras. I'm not clear about how many more. I think, you know, there are 8 now. I'm not sure if there were 6 or 3. It's confusing. But more visibility has got to be better for safety. So yeah, this is exciting. It looks like the full self-driving hardware suite will cost an additional $8,000. So yeah, I mean, for safety, I guess it's worth it. But I mean, you're not talking about a $35,000 car anymore.
Yeah, but safety is worth it, I think, in the long run. If you're getting a Tesla, you might as well. I mean, seriously, that's half the awesomeness of a Tesla are all those features. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, the Chinese are coming for Apple, Tesla, Netflix, and others. They might be coming for you. Ian Thompson is here to discuss. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. Now, we're all used to losing our possessions. Newsweek reports that the average American wastes 55 minutes a day looking for things they own but cannot find. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, computers, backpacks, bicycles, even pets in just seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. Now, you can easily attach it to your items via key loop or adhesive. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so that battery is going to last you up to a year. You can add a laser-engraved message to each Tracker Bravo, like return or pet info. You can now personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. This is ours. It says Tech News Today on it. You can put your picture on it. You can put a picture that you drew on it. You can laser engrave pretty much anything on there. Leo has one of himself that Tracker made, and so that's great. So pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device. Find its precise location with the tap of a button. It is that easy. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can also customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. Now, if you lose your phone, you press the button on your tracker and your phone will ring even if it's on silent. There are over 1.5 million devices. That means Tracker has the largest crowd's GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. Then when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. So go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get 30% off your entire Tracker order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT, to get 30% off your entire order.
So there's a new technology company in town, but in reality, they aren't quite so new at all. Ian Thompson from The Register joins us to talk about the big event put on by Le Echo in San Francisco today. How's it going, Ian?
It's pretty good, Jason. Yes, it's been an interesting event. It was, in terms of lavishness, they'd hired out the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco and, you know, set up all these fantastic whiz-bang things and made what is a very, very gutsy announcement indeed.
So, okay, so it was a big event. It really seemed like they, you know, like you say, that the venue, they really went all out. It was like an hour and a half long. They didn't start small in their American debut. The company's been around for a while, though. Can you tell us a little bit about Le Echo, kind of who they are exactly?
Indeed, yeah. They started in 2004. They're a Beijing-based company, but they do have a dual headquarters now, one in China, one in North America. They started out as a video streaming company and were the first Chinese video streamers to actually go public on the stock exchange back in 2010. Since then, they've expanded out. They've got their own studios making TV and films. You're shortly going to be seeing Matt Damon in a film called The Great Wall, which was funded by the company.
Oh, okay.
But they've also got into smartphones, smart TVs, and now electric vehicles, as we saw as today's launch. So they're really kind of going after Apple, Samsung, Tesla, Netflix, and pretty much anyone else they can get their hands on.
Exactly. All right. So let's talk about a little bit of, you know, a few of their announcements, some of the products. First of all, they showed off a phone that I saw, the $399 Le Pro 3. Did you get a chance to kind of take a look at this? What did you think?
I did get a little bit handsy with it. And well, first off, $399 is the base price. But okay, if you order sort of fairly early on, you can get a $100 discount on that, which brings it down to about just under $300.
Okay.
Now, I got hands-on with it. The base hardware specs are very, very impressive. It's using Qualcomm's Snapdragon 821 processor, which is the fastest mobile processor that firm produces. 4 gig of RAM, 64 gig of storage, 16 megapixel camera, USB-C. And it's, in terms of when you actually sort of tried playing with it, it's got this sort of brushed metal finish, which doesn't feel particularly high quality. I mean, none of it actually screams beautiful design in the way that, you know, the early iPhones did or some other phones do. But for the base, you know, for the hardware that you're getting for that price, it could be a very very compelling pitch because, you know, at the end of the day, nobody really uses their, well, okay, only sad people use their phone as fashion statements. What you actually want is a phone that does the things that you want it to do. And based on the pure hardware specs, this will do that. It's got a nice, easy Android, sort of unskinned Android system. Certainly the camera pictures looked very good indeed. It's awesomely slim. Well, it's quite slim, but it has a huge battery. I mean, it's way in advance in battery terms as anyone else. They reckon you can get at least 33 hours talk time if you really want to talk that long, but easily a couple of days without a charge, I would have thought, based on the battery capacity as it stands. So it looks quite impressive. The design needs a bit of smartening up, but for the price point, you know, this is less than half of what Samsung and Apple and Google are selling their phones at, their premium phones at the moment.
Yeah, that was kind of what I noticed, especially when you consider the Snapdragon 821 that's inside of it. That's what's in the Google Pixel as well. And it does, you know, it's definitely the latest, the hottest, and you're going to see this on a lot of the more, you know, more premium Android devices as they come along. Yet here, half the price. What do you think about viability of Le Echo products in the U.S., considering this is kind of where they're beginning?
Well, this is the big question because they're a completely unknown brand. I mean, when I've talked to people on, you know, a couple of days before this, they're like, Leco? Who is that? A French firm or something?
Right,
you know, it's
right.
Just like nobody had any idea who they were. And we've seen this with, you know, Xiaomi has tried to come over here. Huawei tried briefly to get into the US market and build a brand. The conventional thinking is that unless you've actually got a solid brand that people will gel with, then you're not going to have much success in the smartphone market. But you see, I've got my doubts about this. I think the market is quite right, frankly, ripe for a new brand. I mean, Samsung's reputation is lying in flames, quite literally in some cases. Apple is, you know, treading water, but not really doing anything particularly spectacular. Mm. The really bad news on this launch is for Google, because, I mean, they're trying to establish the Pixel brand, and here they've got someone selling pretty much the same phone with a different casing for less than half the price. So I get, if I'm thinking these days, particularly with American income shrinking, price is going to become more important than bragging rights. And so I think they do stand a decent chance of at least building themselves a niche market and maybe expanding that out.
So in addition to the phone and all the other things you mentioned, they also released a bicycle with a built-in headlight, laser side markers. I'm not even sure what that is. GPS, a music player, a security system. I mean, what? That
like, we make everything.
It's just like they threw a bunch of stuff. It's overwhelming how much stuff was announced.
Well, yes. I mean, I was thinking the same thing when they first talked about the Android bike, and then they got some suitably floppy-haired youngsters to drive one up onto, do wheelies up onto the stage on one and then drive away. But then when you actually looked at the bike on the stand itself, it did look kind of interesting. I mean, I've got a couple of friends who are pedal heads, and they spend a ridiculous amount of money on things like specially tuned sprockets and titanium bike chains and the rest of it. There is a market for people. It's kind of like gaming, you know, the gaming market. Gamers will spend a ridiculous amount of money to get the very latest kit, and so too will cyclists. Now, it did look a bit over the top, and the laser thing, by the way, does actually make sense. They've got twin lasers running behind the bike, so if you've got a psychopathic driver coming up behind you, it gives you a little bit of warning so you can swerve out the way and save yourself some skin grafts. But, I mean, it's a cute product. I don't think it's ever going to be a core product for them. But, I mean, the design was pretty good. It was fairly comfy to sit on. I do kind of like the gizmos, although I wouldn't, you know, spend money to put them on a bike, particularly in this town where, you know, a flash bike like that is going to have a very limited half-life unless you've got a good lock on it. It does have an alarm system and a location tracker, but those things are fairly easy to defeat. So, I mean, amongst severe pedal heads, I think people will like it. I don't honestly think it's going to be a mass market design, but it's an interesting play, put it that way. I don't think it's ever going to be very particularly key to their market ambitions.
Sure. And I mean, along these lines, obviously, the thing, maybe the headline winner of the announcement is their self-driving car. They showed off the Le C Pro. Mm-hmm. And first of all, just kind of made me laugh a little bit that Michael Bay found a way to interfere with yet another product event. Exactly happened here?
Well, he actually, the Le C concept car is being used in the new Transformers film, which Bay said isn't called Transformers 5, but it is the fifth Transformers film. Right. He did like a sort of video, He did a little video promo. Just like, here I am in London with this car and you can't have it because I need it right now. It was amazing because considering the last time Michael Bay tried to do a tech promo at Samsung, he completely fluffed it. His autocue failed. And yes, he had a meltdown at CES. So I highly recommend watching that video because it's hilarious watching the guy just, I just can't do this, and walking off stage.
It's hilarious and heartbreaking all at the same time. I showed it to Megan earlier today.
I had never seen it.
She had never seen it. And just watching it, like I got those those goosebumps of I don't know, just feeling bad for someone. Just like, cringy.
I know. It is cringeworthy to watch. But at the same time, he's inflicted so much bad cinema on it.
That's a good point.
So difficult to feel sorry for the guy. But yeah, I mean, it's a very flashy concept car. It has differing levels of automation, they said, so that if someone's slightly unsure about their driving, it'll take over certain aspects of it. It's not going to be fully autonomous, I don't believe, but they were kind of sketchy on details. Now, this isn't the car that's going to finally go onto the market. What they said is they'll have a commercial version of this that will be unveiled at CES, ready to go on sale, or at least that will the final product that will be going on sale at some point in the future. I mean... Coming out of the venue, there were a couple of people driving past in Teslas, and I kind of looked at it, and it's just like, yeah, that does look like a bit like yesterday's Jam compared to this car. But, I mean, this is a concept car, and they're built to look flashy. So what the final product will look like, we have yet to see. But certainly based on its design stylings, then really impressive. What we didn't see was it driving at all. And right. that's going to be absolute key because everyone's up in arms about autonomous driving systems at the moment for good reason.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So, you know, you mentioned Xiaomi before, and like Xiaomi always has these really interesting products that look a lot like Apple products, but are, you know, less than half the price. But then you often can't buy, you can only buy them in China. So are these things going to, are these LISI things going to be available globally for people to purchase?
They didn't say globally, but certainly in the US, they'll be available from November the 2nd. They're selling entirely online. So they're not, there's going to be no middlemen, no carrier deals, nothing like that. So they're purely going through their website. They've got a reward system in there. They're going to be having two sale days a year with amazing bargains in true Trumpian style. So, I mean, what they're doing is cutting out all of the middlemen, cutting out a lot of the marketing spend, and just relying on price to drive these forward. And at the kinds of prices that they're offering these at, I can see that actually pulling in a fair few punters. It could be rather interesting to see how this one develops.
Yeah, I mean, that ends up being the challenge, right? It's kind of like what Google has done for a long time, and now they're kind of opening it up a little bit by bringing their phone into Verizon, and maybe next year that, you know, it opens up to more carriers. But what's going to limit LISI and others like them if they don't target the kind of carrier market, let's say, is that if what you're trying to do is penetrate the U.S. in large numbers, that's really going to limit your audience, even on price. Even if you got a great price, you're still not going to reach the people who would even know or trust buying a phone online for this lower price than what they get in the carrier, because they're just so tied into the carrier model. So distribution, at least in the short term, maybe this is a great start. And then maybe, you know, somewhere down the line, a couple of years, they're able to kind of open it up. That would really help them, I think.
We see this is one of the peculiarities of the U.S. market, in that you do give mobile phone manufacturers do give carriers an immense amount of control, and carriers push out a large number of phones. Yeah, and I really don't understand it, because if you buy, you know, the carriers aren't giving you these phones for free. They're building the purchase cost of them into a 2-year contract, which you have to sign up for. You know, it makes so much more financial sense to actually buy the phone yourself, contractless, and then pick the carrier you want to run it on. Now, obviously, some firms like Verizon are a special case because they use, you know, CDMA network that virtually no one else in the world uses. But if you're running a standard SIM card phone, then there's really no reason why you shouldn't be buying your own. I mean, the amount that you pay to the carriers is greater than the purchase cost of the phone generally. It's just a question of stumping up that initial cash. Yeah. And if the price is low enough, I think that could work.
Yep. Agreed. Sounds good. Ian Thompson, thank you for going to the event so that we didn't have to. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Always a pleasure.
All right. Where can people find all your work online?
We're at theregister.co.uk, and my Twitter feed is Ian Thompson, is at Ian Thompson, as you see below, albeit with a very odd name. My parents and I have had words about that one.
Excellent. Thanks again, Ian. We'll talk
to you
soon.
Thank
you. Cheers. See you later.
See ya.
So Kat wrote in to TNT at twit.tv saying, I tried the Google Flight site to book an international flight. As you can see, they offer a $423 flight with links to orbits and the particular airline Avianca. But then after you follow the link, the price increases by more than $200. Oh. Maybe you can let Google know. Feels like fool's gold.
Well, that's no good. So this is the before, 423, book with orbits through the interface, all that. And then total trip, $653.89.
I mean, I have had the experience so many times. Booking a flight is so annoying. Like, I feel like you just, you wait for the right time. And so, I don't know if other people have had any experience, if you've used Google Flights, the service we talked about a couple days ago, and you've had success or a similar experience to Kat, send us an email at tnt@twit.tv.
That's right. All right. Up next, a closer look at Facebook's relationship with Geofegia. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. Mortgages. Don't you love them? You love the house. You don't always love kind of how you get there, all the process behind it, peeling out all that information, digging it up. You might not even know where half that stuff's kept. It's not easy. Well, with Rocket Mortgage, they're bringing the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. If you hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork, with Rocket Mortgage, you can easily do all that. It's share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. That's going to help you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And beyond that, even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on the phone or tablet that you have just laying around. It's quick. It's an easy online process that you can manage from the convenience of even your couch. Just kind of laying there relaxing and, you know, doing a mortgage process. No big deal. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
Last week, we told you about the service Geofedia, a surveillance tool used by law enforcement to target people based on their social media posts. Now, after the ACLU got involved, Twitter, Yahoo, YouTube, Facebook, and others cut off access to Geofedia. Now it seems that Facebook was not only a source for Geofedia, but also one of their clients. Joining us to talk about this is Russell Brandom from The Verge. Welcome, Russell.
Thank you for having me.
So according to sources, your sources, Facebook used Geofedia to catch someone who had broken into Mark Zuckerberg's office. Tell us how they did this.
Yeah, so they already had a contract with Geofedia, and one of the things they were looking for was if there are any social media posts from specific areas, we want to know about it. And so what the security team at Facebook, which is sort of tasked with watching out for these things, saw that there were photos being uploaded from Mark Zuckerberg's office, and they knew that he wasn't there. And so they said, seems like that's something suspicious. And so they went in and they found that it was this person who wasn't authorized to be there. And it's sort of, it's unclear exactly who it was. But, you know, obviously all these CEOs, you know, have various sort of stalker figures and people like that. The interesting thing about it is Facebook had been saying, you know, well, okay, if we had known about this, then obviously we would have restricted access to our API. And so the fact that it was also they were a customer as well as supplying the information suggests that, you know, either the right hand really didn't know what the left hand was doing, or they're really only retracting it now because, you know, it's out public and you know, they in fact did already know. Now, and we don't know which one that is, but it suggests there's sort of more to the story than we really knew about.
So what you're saying is that this person was uploading the photos to his or her Facebook account, the person that was inside his office.
Yeah, we don't know if it was Facebook. So again, Geofedia, yeah. it could have been Twitter, it could have been Instagram, it could have been Vine or Periscope even. Their goal, you know, obviously all of these are public feeds in some ways. And so their goal was to kind of capture as many you know, it could even potentially have been Flickr, as long as it was a public feed. So Geofedia's goal was just to sort of give as complete a picture of social media as possible. And so, really, we know that it was some social media service, something public facing that Geofedia had access to.
So what you're saying was when this story broke, Facebook was like, oh, I had no idea that people were using Geofedia to, survey people to really like.
Yeah.
And we had no idea. And in fact, they did. But you don't know if this was, you know, Facebook's a huge company. It might have been that team might have been way separate from the people responding to this part of the
story. Yeah. And I mean, I think one of the larger things is the question of who gets access to these APIs. I mean, I think as technology consumers, we're often rooting for more people to have access because a lot of times they build really cool tools that are very interesting. I mean, we've seen this a lot with Twitter where, you know, there are these great features that Twitter itself doesn't develop, but people develop on top of it with the API. And so there's been a lot of encouragement for the API to be as open as possible and say, you know, grant a lot of keys, grant a lot of access, and then if someone's doing something bad, catch them and revoke it kind of after the fact. And I think part of what we're seeing here is an example of kind of the problem with doing that is that, you know, in this case, it wasn't obviously a bad actor. And I think there's, you know, to the extent that Facebook was looking for users of its API that were violating the terms of service or sort of doing something that would reflect badly on Twitter or on Facebook, but Twitter as well. This wasn't an obvious choice. But then once you knew who their clients were, that there were a lot of law enforcement clients, and that a lot of this data was potentially going to be used to throw people in jail, it sort of becomes a different thing.
So everything we're talking about are public posts, public Facebook posts, public Flickr feeds, Twitter, Instagram. So do we, I mean, do we have more of an expectation of privacy than we really should? I mean, everything we're talking about is stuff that we're putting on the internet for anyone to see. So what's the complaint really here that a company is using all of this in aggregate?
Yeah, I mean, this is the tricky thing. I think it doesn't seem like any of this was illegal. Right. I think a lot of times when there's a privacy concern, people say Fourth Amendment, you know, this was an unreasonable search, or, you know, did they have probable cause or whatever? Whereas this, you know, it really was public data. I think it's more of a problem for Facebook and Twitter and the various companies that are building these platforms, you know, particularly with protests. Right. So one of the things that came out in the initial ACLU report was that police were using this to look at a protest in Baltimore and then seeing if there was anyone. They used an existing facial recognition system that they had and ran it against these Instagram posts and said, is there anyone here that we have an outstanding warrant for that we can go arrest immediately, as a way to dampen down the protest? And I think, you know, a lot of these services have presented themselves as sort of a positive force for social change in a lot of ways, where you can have a very effective protest and someone can be following it from home by just on Instagram or Twitter, right? And we see this, you know, this has been hugely effective in a lot of police protests against police violence in the last few years. Well, if police are now using these tools like Geofedia to actively clamp down on that with the service's permission and sort of active participation because of the API, then maybe people who are doing that are going to decide they don't want to use Instagram, they don't want to use Twitter, they don't want to use Facebook, they're going to use something else that doesn't do this. You know, that's not a question of what's legal and what's illegal, but I think it's a question of how users are going to feel about sharing data to these platforms.
Yeah, and their understanding of the fact that sharing even little pieces of information in multiple places can create a bigger picture than they might not, you know, it might seem totally innocuous in the beginning, but the bigger picture is much more, I don't know, bigger, I guess, for lack of a better word, but you know what I'm saying.
Or so, not smaller.
Yeah, or not smaller. Thank you. That's the better way to go. So Geofedia also has been apparently marketed to public schools. What's going on there? I think the Daily Dot had this confirmation earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the thing. I mean, it's really tricky because a lot of people, I mean, and it's funny, before all of this came out, I had seen demos from them, and actually I felt a little silly as a journalist because it didn't strike me as a thing that was being used so heavily for essentially public safety. I mean, we have police and we have private security forces. And again, I don't think none of the people who are doing this, you know, they're doing the job that they've been hired to do. But these are essentially, it's a tool that you could imagine being used for marketing. You could imagine it being used for some sort of, I mean, we've all seen a map of Instagram posts or tweets at some point. And in general, that's not an ominous or threatening thing. And that's essentially what they were doing. But then the question is, okay, that's the tool. What are you using it for? Right. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of, okay, are we going to use this to stop kids from tweeting what they want to do while they're in school? Is that something that Twitter wants to participate in? And again, I mean, what we've seen is that it's not, right? All of the services, as soon as this came out, lined up to say, we want no part of this, we're revoking our access. And again, in many cases, it was tricky to find the access, like exactly what was the API key that Geofedia was using? You know, the API system is not set up to keep track of things like this, just because we haven't really had stories like this in the past. I mean, the one thing was Dataminer was a Twitter tool that the Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security was using earlier this year that Twitter revoked their access after a story by the Wall Street Journal. But otherwise, we haven't really seen this being used as aggressively as you know, we now know that it can be.
Well, what you're talking about really is chilling effects, right? I mean, if you talk about schools, like if we train students at a young age that it's totally normal to be watched like this, then, you know, they're going to be feel like that it's okay. And when you're talking about people that might be put in a database purely because they tweeted about Black Lives Matter or something, like then, you know, you might silence someone that might otherwise have something really important to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and also just in a more material sense, I mean, I'm an avid Tumblr user, and some of the best content on Tumblr is being put on there by students in class. And so, I mean, and this is just fundamentally, your users are being punished for using your platform, right? That's what's happening. They didn't have to post an Instagram. They didn't have to tweet. No one has to put anything on there. And they did it, and because of this company, they had some negative consequences. And you know, the API system wasn't tight enough at the time to prevent that. And so it took the ACLU to do that.
Well, Russell, thank you so much for covering this story. It's true. There's not a much detail, but it is really poignant to say like that Facebook might have known all along what Geofedia was doing. And thank you for pointing that out. So thanks for coming on. Russell Brandom is a reporter at The Verge and at Russell Brandom on Twitter.
Thank you, my Russell. Pleasure. And also, this scoop was also, I shared this with Colin Letcher, my colleague at The Verge, so I want to give him due credit because he did most of the legwork on this and was absolutely fantastic. So thank you for having me on.
Was he the one taking pictures in Mark Zuckerberg's office?
He wasn't.
Okay. Thanks, Russell.
Thank you to both of you.
Have a good one.
All right, you too. TNT's fan of the day is Santiago Villa on Twitter, who watched our show over breakfast in Round Hill, Jamaica. He also got a big kick out of using the code name for the Amazon Echo as my safe word.
He got a kick out of us laughing about using the safe word. But we don't have to giggle about it again. It's Jamaica. Look, we're sitting on his breakfast table in Jamaica.
I know. I looked at this picture. I flipped back and forth. I was like, yeah, that's got to be nice.
I want to be there eating that melon, drinking that coffee, lighting that candle. Thank you.
Now I'm crying because I want to go to Jamaica. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video. Take a picture of yourself or your setup or your butter or your candle, your breakfast or your Jamaica. And post it to Instagram or Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook, anything. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it.
The first step to complete Facebook virtual reality is being able to never leave the app and still somehow feed yourself. Find out more about how to do that after the break. But first, let's take a minute to thank Casper, the sponsor of this episode. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the costs. They are revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the costs of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing those savings directly to you, the consumer. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price. Casper combines two technologies, springy latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. A Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support. Breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. We have three Casper mattresses in our house. It's a great mattress. The process of buying it literally could not have been easier. Try sleeping on a Casper mattress. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress, that in reality, you spend a third of your life on that mattress. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. So if you don't like it, send it back. You do not have to keep it, and you don't have to lie down in that showroom. The Casper mattress is engineered to meet the Goldilocks standards of just right, so it's not too hard and not too soft. Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental production standards, and they're made in the USA. Free shipping and returns to US and Canada. Get a Casper mattress today. It's $500 for a twin, $950 for a king size. Compared to industry averages, that is an outstanding price. Also, you can save an additional $50 toward a mattress purchase as one of our audience members. Just go to casper.com/TNT, enter the promo code TNT. That's casper.com/TNT and use the promo code TNT. Terms and conditions apply. Soon, you will never have to leave Facebook, even to eat. The company announced new features in the Pages and Events tool, including polling your friends on what to do when you're bored, buying movie and event tickets straight from the app, and even using Facebook to order food. The only thing you can't do in Facebook is eat that food. So I guess I may be exaggerated a little bit. I'm sure that's coming. The company appears to be offering these services to keep up with other apps like WeChat in China and Line in Japan, who already offer their users these kinds of conveniences and more.
I mean, when I'm using Facebook, I keep hitting tab because I want a tab, but it doesn't give me a tab. And I'm really sad. Sorry, Homer Simpson got there before I did, so I apologize about that. Facebook is apparently not making any money off of this. It's not about making money. Basically, what they are saying they want is they just want those business pages to be more useful. And what better way to do it than to allow people to buy food through them and keep, you know, users inside the walled garden of Facebook.
Right. That's how they're making money.
Perfect sense.
You'll never
go
anywhere.
That's how they're making money. Not directly through purchases, keeping you there forever.
Mm-hmm. That's the plan.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I guess this is big in, it's big in Japan.
Yeah, it's big in Japan.
So maybe it'll be big here. Thank you, Facebook, for that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter, @TechNewsTodayTV.
Twit is now on the Amazon Echo Flash Briefing. Every day get updates to the latest tech news and events from Leo, Jason, and myself. To hear Twit's Flash Briefing, go to your settings in the Alexa app, search for Twit, and subscribe. It's a great way to start your morning or your evening or your afternoon or any time of day. Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm @MeganMaroney.
And I'm @JasonHowell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to Matt for scrolling words on the screen. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good, hopefully. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.